There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question, kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. Easy to get in touch with the show as well. Same digits for the phone number and to call or text. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. It's also pretty cool about it. Remember, that works 56 hours a week of live local shows every day of the week. Live local shows here. So that means Saturdays, that means Sundays, that means weekday evenings, all that. Your chance to interact. So keep that number maybe in your contacts list for FM Talk 106.5. In addition, you can also leave us a talkback message using the FM Talk 106.5 app. You'll see, whatever they call it, the landing page, main page, first dang page you go to on the app. You'll see it looks like a microphone, like an icon there. You press that, you can record a message, emails it to the show, and we can play it back here on there. So check those things out. And also Dr. Bill's forecast on the way in just about 20 minutes here at FM Talk 106.5. So I talked about it yesterday on this show and also this morning on Mobile Mornings. Joined today and good to get this man back in studio and lots to talk about. Now CEO at Vets Recover, retired U.S. Navy Admiral Kent Davis and former Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs Commissioner joining us. Good to see you.
Sean, it is always great to be here.
There's I did this to you last time, so nothing changes. there's a lot I want to talk about with what happened in the primaries last week and incumbents not getting through and where votes might have happened on veterans issues. But before that, because not only retired Admiral, a man who served our country in the theater we're looking at again here in 2026.
Oh, yeah.
So your latest assessment of where we are naval-wise in the Strait of Hormuz, kind of, obviously, you're not giving us anything that requires clearance kind of stuff, but, you know, man-to-man, man-to-woman, what's going on?
Yeah, so I went on TV a few weeks ago to talk about this. We were doing this back in 1987, 88, almost exactly the same thing. I was in the thick of it for 5 months, escorted tankers in and out of the Strait of Hormuz, and some of the same dangers. I think it's a really dangerous situation now because we have a much smaller fleet that's stretched pretty thin. The technology has changed, so the dangers are a lot higher for our fleet over there. And, you know, some of our adversaries have increased their power since 1987. Back in 1987, we were pretty much the only kid on the block when it came to world powers. Now you've got the Chinese and the Russians putting their hands in this. It's a volatile situation. I hope to God that President Trump and his team can work out a solution.
Yeah, they said they're getting close to, I mean, I guess they're sitting down, a story coming up, they're sitting down looking over the latest deal incarnation that came out of the meeting mediated by the Pakistanis. We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, because originally they went on with the demands on both sides. And I said, well, TV runs like it's real. You know, if you're trying to sell an old boat, you're going to mark the price way up, and I'm going to come in and say, if you weren't an admiral, I'll say, Kent, man, I can't give you that. We both kick around until we found
it. It's so, the art of the deal.
Yes. So hopefully, but some of the stuff the Iranians had asked for before is just not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Yeah. We hope there's a meeting in the middle somewhere, and we move on. This is not helping anyone right now. I mean, we're all paying the price for it.
Literally, yeah.
Literally.
And so have our servicemen. It's one thing that, I mean, we have shown out in a fantastic way, but we have lost human beings.
We have.
You know, we've lost our military members. And you know, there's a story about the Iranians, I think, yesterday said, well, we shot down a plane. And we said, no, you didn't. And listen, the Iranians, if their mouth is moving, you need to probably get two or three sources on what they said.
Sure.
But they have we have lost material in theater.
Oh, listen, I've been in the thick of this since the mid-1980s. I've lived in the Middle East 2 years of my life on deployments. I lived in Doha, Qatar.
Mm-hmm. I've got a buddy who lives there.
Lived in Afghanistan. All of these places that you hear about in the news every night, it hits home with me because I literally lived there. Got to know the people, and I know the impact it has on their lives, much more so than ours. At least we're not worried about missiles flying into America like our allies in Qatar and UAE are.
Yeah, and they, I think in some of this, obviously there's going to be an outer voice from these countries to stay within a PR world of what they can say. But what their actions are showing me is they've all even gotten closer to the United States, the Gulf states, because of Iran.
Absolutely. People have no idea the ties that we have in the Middle East. I mean, U.S. Central Command Forward Headquarters is in Qatar. Al-Udeid Air Base is in Qatar. We have close ties with Dubai and the rest of the United Arab Emirates, and of course, the presidents in Saudi Arabia. There is a centuries-old, millennium-old hostility between the Persians and the Arabs. That's part of what's going on right now.
Right. But they have to, you know, watch this. The rhetoric does get tamped down coming out of their PIO office or whatever it is there, right? Because it's still, while Sunni and Shia split, it's still Islam, it's the United States. They right. got to be a little measured. But their behaviors, their actions tell me when they're working with Israel to bring Iron Dome assets in, that they tells are. Me that, you know, they're not going to, they don't want that publicized, but that action tells me something.
It does. Unfortunately, it probably held up the Abraham Accords and some of the progress that was being made there. This war has held that process up a little bit, but there's a lot of cooperation going on that people don't know about.
Admiral, from a naval perspective here, too, you were there in the 80s. Drones weren't a thing.
No.
And I've been talking about this for a long time and marveled at the Ukrainians' ability. Well, there's something about the pressure of being attacked that advances your technology. But that the Iranians then didn't have drones. Now they have drones that, in that smaller theater, those are, I mean, that might as well be some bigger asset, right? I mean,
you bet. Look,
warfare, you didn't have to fight those.
Then. Warfare advances technology on an exponential scale. Mobile is an example of that. During the Civil War, the development of the submarine here in Mobile, that's a historic example. But yeah, in 1987, our biggest worries in the Strait of Hormuz literally were World War II era contact floating mines.
I mean, so the way people think about mines, that's what the Admiral's talking about. Like what you picture if you drew a mine, that's what you were dealing with in the 80s.
Yeah, it was contact mines. They had these nodules that stuck out, and a ship actually had to hit them to blow up. They were World War II
thing
era
all,
mines.
The things we all picture when a civilian goes, a mine, the thing that's in our head, it's something like that.
Well, the technology has changed drastically. Now you have very advanced magnetic mines. The drone technology, which didn't exist 40 years ago at all, you hypersonic missiles, which are a real threat. I mean, there's a real threat that the North Koreans or Chinese might start supplying the Iranians with hypersonic missile technology, and then every one of our ships is a sitting target.
Yeah, this one thing I wondered why the Iranians had, they had the cash flow, why they didn't go out, if they were going to get a nuclear weapon, why didn't they try to buy one from Pakistan? You know,
yeah.
Why they,
I mean, nuclear power.
Yeah.
And India and Pakistan have been at each other's throats. That's been a hot spot that we better worry about.
So I just look at this. I said, you know, the conflict place is the same, but maybe the tools being used here are different. You know, it just when you talk about the mines, that was interesting. I didn't know what it looked like in the 80s, but I do, from some of the reporting, see what technology. And it's not like the technology they're using. I mean, it's way, way advanced compared to back then, but it doesn't take the whole GDP of the country to do it. I mean, drones are, we're not talking, you know, $20,000 drone for a million is a good drone.
Absolutely. I mean, the Ukrainians attacked Moscow recently with drones, and it freaked out the entire Russian establishment.
Well, yeah. Finally, it came to their front doorstep.
Absolutely.
Well, you talked about the submarine thing, too. The ones they use, and they've talked some about it. It's not like I have some intel nobody else has, but they, what they use to bring, you know, certain ships, $1 billion ship in the Black Sea fleet for the Russians was taken out by, they're not even truly, what I've seen is completely a submarine. They're right at the surface. But most of the bodies underwater, almost impossible to detect. That thing cost them, I don't know, $45,000 for the Ukrainians, a $1 billion ship in the Russian Black Sea fleet.
Yeah, incredible developments, even in the U.S. Navy, in unmanned underwater vehicles and surface vessels done very cheaply that suddenly threaten $1 billion
right.
ships.
Yeah, that's so. Think about. We can all just think about it. Here's an admiral. You've got these things under your command. The most expensive ships that have ever sailed the sea, right, or steamed or moved around, in the U.S. Navy, and something that could cost $45,000 or less could sink that asset.
Yeah, we're kind of in an era like we were in the 1930s when there was a big change in technologies in services like the Navy, where we realized that, gosh, big battleships might not be the future of warfare. Billy Mitchell came along and proved that air warfare was probably the future. We're kind of in a big debate now in debate circles. Is it smart to build multi-billion-dollar vessels, including aircraft carriers? Mm-hmm. I served on an aircraft carrier. They're incredible, powerful platforms, but are they becoming sitting ducks?
That's what I'm wondering. I kind of got there in a circuitous route with my dumb questions, but that's where I am. It's like, do we need to be? I know the cliche about turning a battleship and turning the Pentagon is probably even slower, but are we thinking about different things? We'll come back a long and wide-ranging conversation with Admiral Kent Davis right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:21, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have y'all along. And always good to talk to Admiral Kent Davis, CEO at Vets Recover, which, by the way, update on Vets Recover was happening right now. I know we're talking about just all the people served, even beyond the vets. We have first responders. We have people's families that are vets and first responders. I mean, this is quite a footprint.
Yeah, you know, it's a double-edged sword. When we're treating a lot of veterans and first responders, we're happy to do that. That's our mission. But it's an indication that, wow, there's a lot of people out there that need help. We just had Memorial Day. It's a time to pause and reflect on those who gave their lives to the country. But let's not forget that we've lost 13 people in combat since we started the war
that
with Iran over 2 months ago. We probably lost about 600 or 700 veterans in this country to suicide in the last 2 months.
Think about that, because I mean, the number that gets rolled out is 23 a day, and everybody I know who's in the world of helping veterans and veterans, they say that is the lowest the number could be. That's not realistic. It's higher.
Oh, I've had coroners tell me, look, I will report something as an accidental death, and I'm pretty certain it was a suicide, especially with veterans, for a lot of reasons. Sometimes religious, sometimes you want to be 100% sure. There's insurance reasons. There are some estimates. Operation Deep Dive says that number is perhaps twice that high.
Every day.
Every single day in this country. Every single day. We think anywhere from about 17 to 40 veterans take their own lives every day in this country. That's a national tragedy that doesn't get enough attention.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't get enough attention here in Alabama.
And you have what y'all are doing at Vets Recover is best practices, because it's not just the things you do. It's administered by people who know, by veterans.
Yeah. Where almost all of us are veterans ourselves. A lot of us are in some kind of recovery ourselves. It's a holistic approach. It's a very individual approach. It's not a cookie-cutter approach. Every person that comes in is different. We recognize that. We're proud we're doing that. But I got to tell you, it is very, very tough to be in that business, especially in Alabama. It's tough to establish a nonprofit, and it's tough to keep a nonprofit like that going, which is sad.
Obviously, I mean, you've got to run on donations for a long time. Now you have VA contracts, people coming in. But the setting something up, tough to do in Alabama, because we're here to talk about the politics. Unfortunately, there's the politics of veterans. It shouldn't be that way, but it is. But does the state make it hard for all charities of sort, or is it?
They do. Look, you know, I've gotten in trouble for being a critic sometimes, big time, but it's true. We pride ourselves in the state on being free market, conservative, pro-business, but this is one of the most bureaucratic states I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
1819 News, Yellowhammer News did great stories a few months ago about the certificate of need process in Alabama to establish a facility like Vets Recovery.
Can you explain that? Because people may have heard that before, but what a certificate of need is and who gets to make the decision.
So to establish a facility like Vets Recovery, you have to formally apply for permission to establish with the State Health Planning Board. Good people. Not their fault. They're enforcing the law. Most states have done away with that certificate of need process and said, why wouldn't we let the free market govern when there's a need for that? And if people want to take the risk and get into that business, do it.
Yes.
Not in Alabama. You have to apply for a very formal, very rigorous certificate of need process. And basically, anybody can protest your application and tie it up. And that's happened repeatedly where us, Longleaf Recovery, others protested, and then that small startup nonprofit has to spend sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars to battle that legally. There's a delay. Took Vets Recovery 2 years. Mm-hmm. We finally got it done. But that's just the first stage. And then
it's a disincentive to try to do anything.
Exactly. Then all of the regulations, sometimes the open hostility towards anything that's viewed as competition. It's tough to overcome that. I just don't see that in other states.
Yeah, and the people that make the decisions on certificate of need are populated by people that are already running operations that would be within that domain.
Sometimes, yeah, you have vested interests that are making those decisions or at least influencing those decisions.
So go through this crucible 2 years later, get to this point, which is a great thing. We've celebrated here and the work y'all are doing. And y'all got to grow. I mean, it's y'all's physical footprint keeps growing. And I think your messaging, I thought about this too, in talking about with the example that you're doing at Vets Recover and sharing that around the state, the same way I look at like St. Jude. Okay, kids go to St. Jude, and we do fundraising here for St. Jude. But also the doctors at St. Jude share the information on how they did it with physicians all over the country that are helping kids. Like this, like Vets Recover such a success. I like the idea of that information being, y'all go do something like this. Here's how it works.
We do that. We're a very specialized niche operation, very successful. There's nothing like it in Alabama that has the holistic approach, the range of services. We are very open. We say we will help anybody with this mission. We're a nonprofit. We ain't in it for the money. We're there to help our brothers and sisters. We get a lot of contacts from out of state that want us. We're negotiating with folks down in Miami, Florida right now to perhaps go down there and establish a center down there. Had contacts in Georgia, Tennessee, Texas, you name it. There's something in Alabama. I can't figure it out why there's not more reception for this. I think
I don't get it in a state where, I mean, we talk about the numbers, 400,000 veterans. You multiply it by their family. You know, we're looking at pushing close to a million or more veteran-related families in our state. Alabama, you look through the wars, the number of our people that have gone to fight per capita is super high.
And, Sean, worse than that, you look at the statistics. We're always at the worst end of the stats when it comes to veteran suicide.
That's what I'm saying.
Addictions.
Why wouldn't it be the primary idea? I mean, why wouldn't we be the example to other states?
Well, I'm going to get in trouble for this. We do battle. We touched on it with the whole certificate of need process, but it continues after that. There is a lot of crony capitalism in Alabama. Mm-hmm. I'm not the first to say that. Many people admit that. Study after study shows that Alabama has a problem with cronyism and protectionism. We've got to get beyond that and say, what are the real problems? Why can't we all just work together on solving that instead of these petty political wranglings sometimes that we see?
I don't know. It's a question for the legislature, right?
Yeah.
And maybe there'll be some new people to answer that. I want to talk about that. We've got just about a minute here before the break. But something as we've been reviewing what happened in the primaries, and a lot of people have been asking questions about, holy cow, look at the number of incumbents that didn't win.
Yeah.
Right. And that's in these primaries, usually there's a power to the incumbency. It's not everything. Incumbents do get beaten. But generally, if I had to do it, you know, had to bet on something, you bet on the incumbent usually. But many lost.
They did. And I've heard a lot of talk about Alpha supporting and funneling mm-hmm. money and out of state gambling. What I haven't heard is there were a lot of ticked off veterans. And when you have 400,000 veterans in the state in South Alabama, you've got about 60,000. Veterans are much more likely to vote. They're civically minded. They feel like, look, I signed up my life for my country. You better darn sure I'm going to vote. And every time you get a vote from a veteran, it's about 2.1 votes total because of their family members as well. You neglect that veteran vote at your peril as a politician, and I think that happened in this race.
Okay, we're going to pick that up when we come back. More with Admiral Kent Davis, CEO of Vets Recover, right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with 30-plus year veteran and now CEO of Vets Recover. And had his job, I will say, taken away from him at Alabama Veterans Affairs Commissioner as well. And we're talking about that as we went into the break, that looking through what happened in the primary last week, that maybe if you look at some of these incumbents that lost, these were people that voted for SB 67, right?
Yeah, they did. Absolutely. If you look at just about everybody who supported SB 67, they either lost or they had trouble in their races, very close races. I will tell you, there have been, over the last year and a half, there have been several developments politically in the veterans world that I'm happy about. First of all, you have a lot of veterans running for office now, prominent veterans. When you look at, you know, people like Joshua McKee and Jared Hudson, Barry Moore is a veteran and makes a big deal about it. I'm glad to see that, and there's plenty more. Austin Sidwell, I could go on and on, the number of veterans. Terry Waters, just one state Senate seat, a veteran. Now, another development, there's been a growth in regional coalitions amongst veterans. Two new ones, in Montgomery and the Wiregrass region, growing influence. They're working together. Those are big conglomerations of about 30 to 50 veterans organizations that are working much more closely and getting much more astute about political issues. And then the other development has been direct political action. A lot of candidates now are reaching out to Vets Recover, to those coalitions, and wanting to know about veterans issues. Some of them expressing, I'm not happy with what's happened with veterans affairs in the state the last few years. And there's now a veteran PAC in the state of Alabama for the first time, and they endorse candidates and have been funneling money. I'm not involved in that. But I think that's a good development.
Yeah, but listen, when that started, I said it shouldn't. In a perfect world, we would never have to have a reason for there to be a Veterans Political Action Committee and lobbying for veterans, because that would just come by default. But you can wish in one hand, you know.
Isn't that very telling?
Yeah,
it's very telling.
But I've supported it happening because it has to.
The market hates a vacuum, and the vacuum that's been created over the last year and a half, 2 years about Veterans Affairs has caused all of these developments. And if politicians think it's going away, I go all over the state. There are a lot of ticked off veterans. I had someone come up to me in the Coast Guard Exchange 2 days ago, gleefully saying, I'm so glad how some of these elections turned out. I voted against people just because of Senate Bill 67. Now, if you want to talk a specific race, a man I respect and like a lot, Greg Allbritton, fellow veteran, fellow Navy veteran. I saw him a couple of months ago, and I told him face-to-face, I said, Greg, there's a lot of veterans ticked off at you. And he said, I know they are, and I intend to make amends. And I said, I can help you. If you'll talk to veterans, if you come to the South Alabama Veterans Council meeting, if you stop by Vets Recover and bone up on veterans' issues, especially veterans' mental health. He didn't do it. His opponent, Terry Waters, who is a veteran, never met the man, came to the South Alabama Veterans Council meeting, made the rounds, called Vets Recover and asked, can I come by and visit and learn about your mission? Went to veterans events, and I'm telling you, veterans remembered it. When you have 60,000 veterans in South Alabama very likely to vote, and a lot of them ticked off. That was a difference in some of these elections. I'm telling you.
Yeah,
I haven't heard that analysis a lot, but I hear it all over the state.
Yeah, you hadn't made a news story, but for the people you talk to and as veterans and the people that after this passed that just filled my text line, right, with people going, how could this happen in Alabama? How could this happen? They remembered.
Oh, you better believe it. Everywhere I go in the state, I have people come up to me that I don't even know them. They recognize me in restaurants saying, I remember what happened last year, and I'm still angry about that. I think some politicians need to rethink Senate Bill 67. And I will tell you, I won't name names, but I have had several state legislators express buyer's remorse to me because they've said, as I've found out more facts about that, I think I was misled. And I have a couple that have already promised to help repeal it in the future.
Okay, because I want to get to that, but I want to talk. People's memories are short. Y'all, this was when the bill was pushed. You know, he had Andrew Jones and Ed Oliver push it through. It was very quick. Now, I still don't completely absolve our elected officials from saying, hold on, you know, but I've never worked in the world they work in. But, you know, I got to read this. But this, they said right at the end, it got push, full court press to get this voted for. They were told it meant one thing. And you know what? And this is a reason for a lobby for the veterans, because there wasn't somebody else there. Admiral,
right.
I raised my voice with Admiral. There wasn't somebody there going, no, that's not right. We needed just as many lobbyists in their ear on the other side.
Now, this is funny, Sean. When the bill was still in committee in the House, there was a House hearing on it, and you could sign up to go speak for or against. Nobody signed up to speak in favor of the bill, and there were about 14 entities that spoke against it.
And y'all, and went up to the, you know, made yourself seen on Goat Hill and all those things, but the power of a lobbyist has been there for, I mean, I wish it wasn't this way, Admiral, but this is the game.
It's sad. When state house is in session, it's like running a gauntlet to get your way through all the lobbyists there. If people think,
then you got to, I wish they weren't there, but you've got to have one. Y'all got to have a team of them.
Well, it's tough. You know, a nonprofit really can't lobby. You'll lose your 501c3 status.
But not y'all at Vets Recover, but veterans in Alabama. And to see that, talk about the River Region and all that, and getting their organization kind of like we've all, you know, I told you how ignorant I was. I grew up in a place where we had Mardi Gras, I had a battleship in my backyard, and the veterans community was tight-knit. I didn't realize other parts of our state, you know, when y'all showed up there, South Alabama veterans showed up there in Montgomery to see, have themselves seen. I really expected, and I'm communicating with all guys, and I'm like, okay, where's y'all coming from West Central? And y'all are coming from North Alabama. I figured all these veterans groups, and it wasn't true.
Now, there's no doubt that the most astute and active veteran community is in South Alabama, period. Easily. The South Alabama Veterans Council, the Marine Corps League, American Legion, VFW, on and on and on. The organizations down here do great stuff. They work together. I mean, there's a Veterans Commission in the city that does great stuff, and they're actually planning a Purple Heart ceremony on August 7th.
Yeah, I
great
saw that.
Ceremony.
Thank
there's
you for
more stuff
the
going on down here on an active basis, and that was reflected in the vote on Senate Bill 67. Just about every South Alabama legislative member voted against Senate Bill 67. With two exceptions.
Yeah.
One of them was Greg Allbritton. And Greg, I love the man, but he chose the governor, a lame duck governor, over the veterans, and I think it cost him the election. I hate to say it.
Well, I mean, but once again, we look at the entire state, but like you pointed out, over 60,000 veterans in these districts down here.
They remembered.
And they remembered.
Yep.
And
it helped another guy that I like a lot, Matt Simpson, lost. His opponent, Danielle Duggar, came to veterans events, and Matt Simpson voted against Senate Bill 67 and rallied people. I and others will always be grateful to him for that. But Danielle Duggar went out. She came to the South Alabama Veterans Council. She came to Vets Recover. She showed up at several veterans events and made the rounds and listened to people and got out and courted the veteran vote very, very actively.
And a veteran vote that is a easily qualified. You talk about qualified customers. They're qualified customers because y'all go vote.
Absolutely.
And to the lobbying part of it. So let's talk about this. we're going into, we'll be, I don't know, the gavel in February this year or late January. I forget what part we're on. Some years it's end of January, some February. When they go in for the 2027 session, is there going to be something pre-filed or something there to amend, do away with what happened in 67, to restructure? Is there going to be something?
Boy, I hope so. I've talked to several state legislators, both incumbents and some of the new ones, who have vowed they would get behind and even sponsor an effort to either amend or repeal Senate Bill 67. Now, a lot of them, I don't understand why, a lot of them were just afraid of the governor. And much like with the gas tax, I mean, there was strong arming, threats, promises, horse trading. And I've had state legislators say, I couldn't risk going against the governor.
Which is an interesting question, because are we, if you look around the country, you have some states that have strong, strong governors, weaker legislatures. Some places that have strong, strong legislature, weaker governor. We are a stronger legislature, weaker governor, but it shouldn't play out like that.
I don't understand it. Hey, we're coming up on the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. We set up a system of checks and balances amongst the branches of government, but also between the people and government. And I think the people of Alabama have lost power and a sense of accountability over their elected officials. All the issues that have come up in the last few weeks point to that.
Coming right back, more with Admiral Kent Davis right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. That's my buddy Trey. I'm pushing, 19 years now of getting junk gone all over Mobile and Baldwin counties. And it's one of those things, like, if you have and we're going to get around to it, thing in your life, like, I know, we're going to empty out the garage, or I got that storage unit I cut the check on every month, and we have nothing that we need in the storage unit. Whatever it is, you got junk somewhere, you're like, I'll get around to it. Here's how you get around to it. You make the call. The name is the number, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or if you want to do the web thing, like I've done that as well, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. They make an appointment. None of this, like, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. on some weekday. It's an actual day, an actual time. You set the appointment, and all you got to do when they show up is point at the junk you want gone. They quote you a price right there on the spot. If you say yes, they get to work right then and get it gone. So you go ahead and make that appointment today. You don't have to do it this weekend. Make the appointment for next week. I won't tell anybody. 1-800-GOT-JUNK or online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. All right, continue our conversation with Admiral Kent Davis, CEO at Vets Recover, and talking about the politics of veterans, really, which I like I said early on, when you and I first met, I was saying this. I wish it didn't have to be this way, but you can sit and wish, or you can get after it, and you have to be political. Veterans in our state have to be political.
Yeah, and listen, I'm willing to carry the fight forward more and more. I mean, there's nothing else they can do to me. I learned very quickly, boy, you don't criticize politicians in the state. They will retaliate against you. But, you know, come at me, bro. There's nothing else you can do to me. I'm retired from the military, federal civil service. I'm set for life. So I'm about to reactivate my bar license and get involved in more and more legal issues around the state.
Well, that's part of, I mean, that's kind of part of what's happened to you, brought you into that world. Talked about what may or may not happen in this next session. That's what you said you've talked, had private conversations with legislators that could bring it. I am interested, is it an amended 67 that takes it back to, could you amend it, or do we have to completely restructure? I mean, I'd like, if all we need to do is replace these couple things that were changed, can we go back to the way it was without reinventing the wheel, or what's the right thing for veterans?
So I think the best comment in all of this came from our Lieutenant Governor, Will Ainsworth, who said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Why are we messing with a system that has worked well for 80 years since the end of World War II? I had someone in Washington, D.C., in a congressional office, not from Alabama, pull me aside when I was making the rounds up there a couple of weeks ago, and they said, you know, Alabama was viewed for a while as having the best state veterans affairs system in the country because it was seen as apolitical, mm-hmm. and genuinely interested in veterans, now you're just a run-of-the-mill veterans affairs operation governed by politics, and that's sad.
So we've talked about it. You've been very public about it. This person told you as well. We've now gone from an apolitical, which I think it absolutely should have been. Yeah,
this should be one thing that's not about Democrats, Republicans.
Because they all served.
Absolutely.
It's about now politics because of the changes.
I know for a fact people are terrified in the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs to do anything that's going to tick off the governor's office. I've been told that.
Okay, so I got to ask you the next question. That's always follow-ons with me, Admiral. What about that next governor? And I know we still have a general ahead of us, and crazy things may happen, but they won't. Governor Tuberville, any discussions with the veterans community and the governor in waiting?
Well, I will tell you, for a long time, let me be completely nonpartisan.
Okay.
I will tell you, with both Senator Tuberville and Senator Doug Jones, I found both of them to be very interested in veterans issues and listened. Both gentlemen put ideology aside. You know, I have my own preferences. People can probably figure them out. But Senator Tuberville has been wonderful. His staff, I think, the world of. They have listened when it came to veterans issues. They helped me when I was commissioner on some issues. I felt like I could always pick up the phone and talk to them. I met with Senator Tuberville here in Mobile a few months ago when he was down here for an event, had a great conversation. I spent about 30 minutes with his chief of staff in Washington, D.C. just a couple of weeks ago talking about veterans' mental health issues. No ulterior motive. I just hit home that we are not doing enough to serve veterans' mental health issues. Senator Tuberville himself has kind of thought outside the box, looked at alternative therapies for dealing with chronic health issues with veterans, and I think that's what we need. Unfortunately, in Alabama, there has been a mentality that we're not going to think outside the box when it comes to helping veterans with their health issues, especially veterans' mental health issues. And that's sad because there's a lot of good things going on around the country. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. And yet we seem happy with the status quo in the state with a mental health system that can't even meet the needs of the general population.
Right. And on top of that, a higher degree with what you talk about, the level of suicide is definitely not serving the veterans. I don't, and I talk about this with all kind of legislation, but I don't. Best practices I'm good at, good for. Like I look at if Florida does something. Sometimes, you know, in the Alabama legislature, we go, well, we're going to do this thing. I'm like, hey, look, Florida's doing great at it. Just copy what they did.
Why reinvent the wheel?
Yeah.
And, oh boy, this is going to get me in a lot of trouble. We always want that Alabama solution.
Yeah. See what that
which has gotten famous.
Yeah. But why wouldn't you go like, okay, if I'm looking around the country, vets recovered, they're doing awesome, and there's these people out in Tucson, Arizona are doing awesome, let's use their idea too and get every idea in and get the best ideas.
I have cited examples from all over the country with the state legislature and others over and over again. I have told them you've made some mistakes in the past, you could correct. They don't want to hear that, definitely. So good luck next year. I will do everything I can to help. I'll keep trying to be the voice of veterans, sometimes to my own personal detriment, apparently. But somebody needs to be out there championing veterans and speaking the truth and not afraid of the repercussions. And there are a lot of people, understandably, that are afraid.
It needs to be made. It doesn't seem like it's such a high mountain for the politically, the third rail, if we want to take it that way on a negative, to be messing with veterans. Or the positive that they have whatever score it is. Yeah, they like to do the scores. Like this congressman has this score from the freedom, whatever, and this have a score from the veterans.
Yeah, maybe. I've heard that this veteran PAC intends to do that to assign a score.
So if somebody doesn't study it every day, can go, well, veterans PAC says they're 97% or 91% or whatever.
Many organizations do that from the NRA to you name it. And it's probably time for that. I do think a lot of politicians, especially in Alabama, have tended to take veterans for granted. And I will say it again, you take them for granted at your own peril. I think we saw the results in some cases.
That was on display if what you were talking about in a couple of these elections down here, but around the state. Yep. That it was
a lot of close elections, very close. People were shocked at how close some elections were, where they assumed, well, the incumbent's just going to win hands down handily by 20, 30 points. I mean, they were. Jeff Poor was talking about, I guess it was Chris Elliott, was talking about the Andrew Jones. Mm-hmm. He won with 51%. I mean, a few hundred votes. It was like 200 votes difference. And I will tell you, I hear it all over the state. A lot of veterans remember that he was the co-sponsor of Senate Bill 67.
No, it's, it came up yesterday when I was reading that story about him, you know, calling out. And I was interested in him calling out the PACs that went against him. But maybe the gorilla in the room nobody notices is the fact that this is, you know, a state of 400,000 veterans.
Absolutely.
As always, thanks for coming in, and thanks for updating us, and keep doing the great work for the veterans on this side of it and what y'all are doing at Vets Recovery.
Thanks so much, Sean. Anytime.